Salutations, listeners.
Si valis valeo.
Valer magulis.
Nanu nanu. Thank you for tuning in. This is Three Men in a Basement, and we are the Ultra Crepidarians. My name is Colin McLeod.
Mark up here.
Action Jackson.
In this podcast, we review movies, and we deliver to you, the listener, an average schmuck's opinion about hidden gems in the wide world of cinema. In this show, we try and target movies that are not total blockbuster smashes.
Nah.
We try and target movies that are not so obscure that you couldn't track down Trank and pop it in
the trunk?
The DVDs?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That went in a real dark direction that I was not following for a minute there.
Where were you on Saturday night?
You got a fever.
You don't have an alibi for
that. That's not good. Obscure movies. That's what we're talking about. The ones that Jackson's kidnapped.
Yeah. Not the little guy, not the big guy, the medium guy.
Yeah. The medium guy.
Or
it's not David.
No.
Not Goliath. It's like Cecil.
Yeah.
Right? Cecil.
Know, Cecil, he's in the Bible.
He is.
He's in the Bible. Cecil, the guy from the Bible.
Cecil, the guy from the Bible. Everybody knows Cecil. Come on, right?
Yeah,
guys?
Descended from Steve. There was Adam, there was Eve, and there was Steve.
And Cecil.
Well, Cecil didn't come until
Cecil,
later. But
Cecil was after.
Yeah. I feel like Cecil was somebody they just happened upon.
Right.
It's like, we are the only humans on the planet. And then, like, they found Cecil, and just like,
hey.
There's never an explanation for how Cecil came to be.
Well, you don't ask him where he came from.
He's the Tom Bombadil of the Judeo-Christian origin story, right?
That's what I've heard recently.
Yeah.
About
30 seconds ago.
Yep. Yeah. Maybe a little less.
So the Cecil of movies is what we target. That's
yes.
what we're trying to say to you. Ultimately, that's what we're getting at. And we watch these movies, we review them, and we deliver to you our opinion about whether you need to go out, find this Cecil, and watch this Cecil.
Yeah, so we view them and then review them.
Grab that Cecil.
Yep.
Right back into the view.
Yeah.
View and then review.
Yep.
In this, our 48th, yes, episode of the podcast.
That's insane.
We reviewed the movie...
The Sorcerer's Apprentice.
You know, I know he does the silly voices sometimes when we do that.
That's what he's known for.
It really worked with this title.
Yeah, no, that was good.
The Sorcerer's Apprentice really, like, sort of lends itself to...
The Casanova Frankenstein.
Yes.
Yeah, there's an appropriate amount of S's and C's that I can play with, you know.
I do like it when he goes full snake mode.
Isn't that the sound that you make when your pizza's too hot?
Yeah. Or it's, I think it may have been the catchphrase of the WWE wrestler Jake the Snake.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize that sound is actually alternating S's and C's. A lot of people think it's just like a string of S's, you know? It's an S and a C, an S and a C, an S and a C. Because sometimes C's make a S sound.
So like snake language, it's just they just basically boiled everything down to two letters.
Yep.
And it's just alternating versions of that. It's a binary.
Yeah.
Well, if you think about it, a C is like a half an S.
That's true. But there's the other part of the S is a C going the other direction. So
right.
Technically they cancel out.
Right.
So the C's are silent is what you're saying.
Right. Did you see the top part of that S?
No.
No. It's a C.
Oh.
Yeah, thanks.
Guys, we're blowing the lid
right
off this thing.
Real meta in here.
The Serpent Gate.
Serpent Gate. That's it. You got it. The Sorcerer's Apprentice. 2010 film. An hour and 49 minutes. Thoughts?
Yeah,
I'd say that feels right.
Yeah, I felt it went along a little bit faster than that. I felt like it was maybe a tight 90.
Yep.
Or closer to.
Was this meant to be a part of like a series?
It had that vibe.
Yeah.
Clearly they never did anything else, but it did kind of put out that vibe.
Because I kept thinking that it was going to be longer than it ended up being. You know, just, and maybe that's a credit to the world building, perhaps. I don't know. Who knows?
Rated PG. I would probably disagree with that. I think this movie, while I think it would be a soft PG-13, I think might actually be a PG-13.
I was to say, it's like a really hard PG or a really soft PG-13.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's...
It's riding that line between... is this okay?
It's like a 1980 PG.
Yeah.
Right? Like, before PG-13 existed, they gave a lot of leeway to PG.
Well, a 1980 PG can get real.
It's got full frontal.
Yeah. Which there was not in this.
There was not in this, much to our disappointment.
That would have been 13.
Soft PG-13, I would say, for strong themes, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of action and a lot of violence in you know, in a good way, but also not in like a, hey, bring the toddlers. Like, a couple of strong themes, I would say. Is there a fella that can come out and read this description?
I think there's one uniquely suited guy.
Oh, is it Reed?
Yeah, Description.
Yeah, Reed, yeah, Description. I know him.
Hey, how's it going, everybody?
Everybody. You flirted with Cosby there.
Everybody. Are you ready?
So, a protege of the magician Merlin must train his teacher's successor, an introverted but resourceful physics prodigy, in the art of sorcery to prevent the return of Morgana Le Fay.
I like that he started off.
He went through
protege,
half a dozen accents in that.
Like there was a little Banderas in there.
That's right.
There was a little bit of Walken in there.
That's right.
But that's Reed, right?
Yeah.
We never know where Reed is from.
He's an enigma.
You just find your favorite voices and you just stuff them right inside me.
Yeah.
You know? And what you get is real provocative.
Reed's an American's American, right? He's a melting pot.
Oh, yeah.
And you never know what's going to come out, right?
Well, sometimes he borders European, but, you know, it kind of depends on his mood.
Yeah, but I mean, he emigrated at some point. Right. Easier.
He emigrated. He immigrated. He other graded, you know, cheese grated. He cheese grated sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Graded a road or two. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Graded some papers.
Yeah.
All of this makes perfect sense and is totally related.
And relevant.
Okay. What genres do we have for this movie?
Well, this one has action,
yep.
Adventure,
yep.
Family, and fantasy.
What does family mean?
Family's a complicated one, yeah.
That is a weird one.
I honestly think it would be a good movie to watch with your family if your kids were like 10.
Yeah.
Something like that. I probably wouldn't watch it with my kids quite yet, you know? I wouldn't watch it with anybody maybe under like 6.
Yeah, no.
Again, I don't think it's going to like traumatize the kid, but like I think a lot of it's going to miss them. It's bright colors and a lot of flashing and stuff like that. And, you know, it'll probably hold their attention, but I don't think they'll enjoy the movie from like a... I understand this movie perspective, right?
Yeah, no, my kid's still stuck on Finding Nemo.
Which is a complicated narrative.
Yeah.
Let's call it like we sees it.
Yeah.
That's fair. Now, again, you know, it's in the name, The Sorcerer's Apprentice. I would say if someone can handle any of the Harry Potter movies,
mm-hmm.
they can probably handle
it. Yeah.
I would say if somebody understands what a sorcerer is, perhaps they are ready to watch this movie.
Right.
Like, I would watch this movie, you know, in a couple of years with my daughter, maybe. But if I said, like, hey, do you know what a sorcerer is?
Probably not.
No.
I think Fancy Wizard?
Her best guess would be like the thing that goes under the teacup.
Yeah.
I think action, definitely. Adventure.
Yes.
I know why they're calling it adventure. It doesn't fit my definition of an adventure.
They don't really go on an adventure.
Right. But it is something of an adventure. But
I don't know.
My adventure requires, you know, moving like across country or like something where like the environment is changing significantly.
Like Bilbo.
Yeah.
Bilbo went on an adventure.
Well, it was unexpected, certainly.
Yeah.
He was very enthused about going on that adventure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Eventually.
Right. Right. Fantasy, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think this is more fantasy than anything else.
Action and fantasy are strong.
I think this is like the definition of a fantasy movie.
Yeah. I would give it adventure. I would agree that it's not probably as strong as like, say, The Mummy for an adventure or something like that. But
right. But I mean, that's like when you look up what adventure means in a textbook, it just says...
See Brendan Fraser.
Yes.
Like, I wouldn't take adventure away from this, but I wouldn't throw it in there.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything it's missing?
Romance?
Maybe.
Maybe even comedy?
Comedy.
Comedy, yeah. I would, yeah. I probably would give it comedy. It is just chock full of jokes.
Would you say rom-com?
I wouldn't say rom-com.
Because you did say...
So this isn't another Victorian Abdul, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Well, there are some similarities.
You know what? This fits squarely in the recipe of rom-com. I can't even say it. No. Not a rom-com.
Not
this isn't a rom-com like Meet the Feebles.
No. No, God, that was...
Or Tokyo Gore, Please.
Yeah.
Which is the rom-commiest rom-com there is.
Absolutely.
I think Drew Barrymore was in that
Snowpiercer,
movie.
Another, yep. Another great rom-com.
Classic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Classic rom-com.
Feebles. Yeah.
You know, there was love all over that.
Yep.
There was love.
All over it.
Of some flavor.
Yep.
Who do we have in... this movie?
Well, there's one guy you might recognize by the name of Nicolas Cage.
Not the bees.
I think he's just Francis Ford Coppola's nephew.
Right.
I think that's kind of all he's known for.
Mm-hmm.
That's all he's known for.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, I should really take that back. Nicolas Cage is going to kill the shit out of me. And we've already got Tyson after us. So like, you know.
If he can find the map on the back of the Declaration of Independence.
He can find me.
He can find you.
I think I might be on Google.
Yeah.
Nicolas Cage is like one of those actors that like I don't want to meet because I'm afraid of his energy.
Oh, he has a dangerous energy.
What? He's like the definition of chaotic neutral.
Yeah.
I don't like
him. Yeah. Like, I don't think he would wish me harm, but I don't think he would hesitate to cause me harm if need be.
Yeah.
I might get a paper cut talking to him, and I can't risk that.
No.
Okay. We've got another lovely gentleman, perhaps a Jay Baruchel.
Oh, yeah.
Did I pronounce that last name right?
I believe so. Sure. Yeah. It's no Kiefer Sutherland, but...
Well, no. No one can be Kiefer Sullivan.
Jay Baruchel, trust me, if you don't know his name, you'll know his face. He's in most of Judd Apatow's fare, right? So he's a skinny Canadian guy who's got a very nasally voice, oftentimes is outfitted, I think not because he needs them, but because they suit his character type, with like very thick glasses, plays Windows and Fanboys.
He's actually been on our podcast before. He was in Goon.
He was in Goon. Yeah, he was the best friend in Goon.
How to Train Your Dragon.
I think that's one of like his most well-known, you know, he's the voice.
Yeah.
Yeah. He plays himself in This Is the End. You know, the main characters in that are Seth Rogen and Jay Baruchel, right?
Yeah, and if you don't know his name, you know his face and his voice.
Mm-hmm. And his energy, kind of like Nick Cage. He's got a very notable, meek energy.
It's not Nick Cage energy.
Awkward, meek, you know?
But like, Jay Baruchel is one of those people, there are actors that play themselves in everything. And I would say that Jay Baruchel fits into that archetype.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he can throw on different characters and play them convincingly, but he always plays them as Jay Baruchel.
There's no like negative connotation to this, but would you say he's more like beta male? Like he's very...
You've been watching a little bit too much Andrew Tate.
No, it's just too much, and too much Baden. It's too much fucking Baden. No, but he's got like that, like he's very loud, he's very charismatic, but he's not in any way like assertive or aggressive.
No, you're right. He is very like... I'm gonna call out. And this is not all of his characters. Like a Goon was a massive departure for this character, but most of his characters are, I'm gonna use this word, wimpy.
Yeah.
You know,
I think
he's
you've
just
been watching a little bit too much Joe Rogan.
No, I've been watching a little bit too much Popeye, and I gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today. See what I did there?
But yeah, I mean, if they were to do a grown-up version of Diary of a Wimpy Kid, Jay Baruchel would be perfect.
Yeah.
Yes.
But like he plays a wimp-ish, but like he's that guy that you like root for.
He's the guy who always finds his way. He did it in She's Out of My League. He did it in this movie. He did it in How to Train Your Dragon. He did it in Fanboys. Like his character starts off really wimpy and then finds his backbone somewhere along the way and develops into something a little bit more authoritative.
Yeah, he's the unexpected, unassertive character that goes on the hero's journey.
Right.
Like
almost like you put him in a movie and then like there's your script.
Yep.
We also have Alfred Molina in this movie. I would not have been able to give you his name, but he plays Doc Ock in Spider-Man 2.
Yeah, he does.
I think that's what most people know him from. Also, in the movie Frida, he plays Diego Rivera. So I have actually not seen that movie, but I would suspect that a movie about Frida Kahlo, Diego Rivera is a very prominent character in that movie.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he did play Jor-El in DC League of Super Pets, you know, and that's a big career-defining moment for him.
Oh,
I
yeah.
think, you know?
But Alfred Molina's been all over the place.
Yes, yes. We're not trying to shit on him, Alf.
No, you'd probably recognize his face. We've also got Teresa Palmer. I think her career can be summed up mostly with...
Agreed.
Oh my God, she's so pretty.
I am number four.
A motor mechanic?
Number six.
I am number four. She was number six.
Yeah.
But 12th in line.
Yeah.
She was in Warm Bodies.
Yeah.
She was the love interest, right?
I love that movie. That's a classic.
Oh, it's a great movie.
And a lot of people don't understand. That's actually a Neil Gaiman story. And Neil Gaiman is incredible.
Which one? Warm Bodies?
Yeah.
I never
saw
it.
That's the guy that wrote that movie that Mark didn't like.
Yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
I can't think of anything.
No?
What movie
did
I not like?
Nothing?
You can't pick one.
Mark, he wrote Meet the Feebles. Come on.
Don't commit bad movies to memory.
Wow.
And I'll be honest with you, they're a bit of like dust in the wind.
For those of you listening at home,
dust.
You can't see it, but there is a gauntlet on the fucking ground right now.
Yep.
And
would you paint a star on me?
He threw it right down there.
Man, Grace is going to kick your ass.
If I remembered what movie you were talking about, which I don't, because it's Dust in the Wind. I certainly wouldn't put a star on it.
How dare you, sir?
How dare you,
sir?
Yeah, I'd be afraid if there was something to be afraid of.
Jackson is just turning, I mean, he's purple right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I'm turning violet.
Like a Barney. Barney. Who else?
Who else we got in this movie?
So you might recognize Toby Kebbell. I didn't know his name, but he was in Fantastic Four as Dr. Doom.
Two other names that we wanted to call out. Omar Benson Miller, who's just fucking awesome. He's super funny and he's very charming. He plays Sol George in 8 Mile.
Yep.
He's also in Ballers with The Rock. You would recognize his face. And then the final person who wasn't in the movie but did do the initial narration was Ian McShane, who you might recognize from Deadwood.
American Gods, which is another Neil Gaiman.
Neil Gaiman, that was the guy who wrote that really awesome movie that Mark didn't like?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, I don't know what you're talking about. Not sure. Go on this like forever here.
The Stardust thing? Yeah, no, we will.
No.
It's never going to die.
Never going to die.
Have you guys ever seen Alice Krieg in anything else? She was the one that actually played Morgana. For whatever reason, I saw this movie at just the right time in my life. She played the Borg Queen in First Contact.
Oh, yeah.
So, like her face, like her mannerisms are just cemented in my head. I don't know. It just jumped off the page.
I know what you're talking about. I think that pretty much wraps it up for cast list. I noticed we didn't talk about where Nicolas Cage is from. Do we want to throw out some highlights?
Con Air.
Oh.
Con Air's a classic.
Yeah. Raising Arizona.
Well, I mean, you mentioned, you didn't say National Treasure, but, he found that declaration of independence.
And National Treasure 2.
Ooh, yeah.
He was in both of them.
At the height of his career, though, a lot of people don't realize this because it's probably his biggest role. He played that dude in Wicker Man who's screaming about the beast.
The beast. Yeah.
And I'm sure his character had a name, but I don't remember it.
Well, there you go.
Ghost Rider.
It could have been Cecil.
Cecil D.
Bees.
Cecil D. Bees.
Cecil D. Bees.
He's seen the bees.
Yeah, he sees all the bees.
He sees all the bees.
No, it's Nick Cage. If you don't know who Nick Cage is, you probably don't know how to get to this podcast.
Yeah.
Oh, we didn't do cherries, fellas.
I think I had a pop. Okay. I think I had a pop.
Mark's over here saying, is it in yet? You seem very unsure about your decision there.
Well, yes. It's like one of those movies that I don't think I've seen it, but it's just been in pop culture for so long that I don't know for sure if I haven't seen it.
One thing that I think Mark is describing that is not a phenomenon that most people are familiar with is working at a movie theater.
Yeah.
It can be really difficult to know whether or not you've seen a movie or not, just because A, you're so much more inundated with the buzz from that movie than your random Joe Schmo on the street. And B, oftentimes you will walk in on parts of that movie either to do a theater check or to take your break or whatever it is. And you end up seeing some of it, and it can be difficult to disentangle whether or not you've actually seen it, A to Z.
Well, that was when my wife worked at the movie theater, she would tell me about she's never actually watched this movie from start to finish, but she's seen enough of it during theater checks that she's seen the entire movie in bits and pieces out of order.
Yep. Very familiar with that.
Yeah.
So, I think I've seen it-ish, but I don't think I've actually sat down and watched all of it.
Well, you have now.
Well,
how about you, Jorkson?
Definitely not a cherry for me. I've seen this a couple times. I believe this is my fourth time seeing this.
I think I'm in about the same category. I think it's 4 to 6 for me. You guys want to move on to Rex?
Rickety-wreck-wreck?
Yeah.
Rickety-wreck-wreck-wreck-wreck-wreck-wreck?
Sure. I don't know. I was not, blown away by this movie, but, it was fine. I enjoyed it,
I enjoy this movie for a couple reasons, which we will get into in Weapon Wes. So, yes, I would recommend it.
To a general audience?
To a general audience,
any exceptions?
No, I find this movie to be generally unoffensive.
Yep, same here. No caveats.
I think I would agree. Yeah, I would definitely put it in the recommend category, other than maybe, we said, really small children.
Yeah.
It's...
I know that there are groups of people that don't enjoy fantasy movies, but here's the thing. If I rec a movie to you and give you a brief description of it and you say, hey, that's not for me, I'm still going to recommend it because I still think it's enjoyable.
This movie also has a fair bit of cheese.
Yeah.
And I think some people are more sensitive to cheese than others. And I would say if you're sensitive to cheese, perhaps, this is not the fare for you.
Yeah, if you're lactose intolerant, I would avoid it.
It's a particular kind of cheese, though, like a brie.
Or a Stilton.
Yeah, it's like a Nick Cage cheese,
Yes.
When I think cheese, I don't necessarily think of the things in this movie, but when I think Nick Cage cheese, yeah.
Yeah.
It's not full cage, God, you don't go full cage.
Never go full
Never
cage.
Never go full cage.
But yeah, like a half cage.
Okay. So we are ready to... This has been WKRP, signing off. Mark's really had that kind of lilt, right?
Right.
Yeah, just whatever you think is going to happen, it's not. So.
Okay, how does this movie begin?
In the year 2000, I believe.
In the year 720.
Well, 720.
Is that a flashback or is it a flash forward or is that the present time?
It starts off in 720 AD.
That's actually funny. My daughter asked me a similar question about a movie that did the same thing. And, the question raised an interesting point of like, and I did come down on a side where like, it is not a flashback. Because the movie starts there, then the movie itself flashes forward.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a fine line. So if somebody said it was a flashback, I'd be like, all right, yeah.
So this movie takes place in the year, in the 1700s. Most of it is in a flash forward of, the year 2000.
What is he talking about?
I don't know. It's the 700s.
The 700s.
Was it 700s? Yes.
No, 700.
700s? It doesn't matter. The 700s and the 1700s were historically linked. Okay? by the number
true.
Seven.
Beginning of the Dark Ages and the Renaissance. They really did. I suppose they bookended the medieval.
I mean,
period.
Yeah, don't patronize our listeners.
I will say one thing that they have in common is they happened before now.
Did they?
Yeah.
Or did they?
I mean, we are in the flash forward.
That's right. So are we really in the present? Or are we in the future? They're in the present.
We're always out there carrying the flag, sort of marching into the future. And those lazy fucking bums in the past are just sitting there not moving.
Yeah.
Losers.
Okay, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay, I was wondering.
Right, so it's kind of a key component.
It was just a brief
So tell us about the 1700s, Mark.
A brief millennia before. God damn it.
What about briefing millennials?
It's fine. Oh,
we had a few kind of sort of important historical events. You had the Battle of Hastings, and
did that really make a difference?
Does that really matter that much? The rise and fall of the Byzantine Empire, like boo-hoo.
I don't remember it happening, ergo, did it?
He makes a compelling argument.
That's fair.
If the Pope, farts in the woods, does it really happen if nobody heard it? That's how the phrase goes.
Yeah. If the Pope shits in a funny hat, does a bear wear one in the woods?
Did I have a stroke? What is happening?
We are terribly misaligned. So, this movie
I'm having a good time, though.
In the 700s, like most movies do.
Yeah.
We're talking wizards. We're talking, Merlin. So, it starts with like a voiceover, right?
Ian McShane.
Yep, Ian McShane. We're talking about somebody else. Ian...
This is going great, guys.
No, it really is.
It starts with exposition. Starts with Ian McShane's voiceover.
Oh, it's Keith or Sutherland.
He's your fucking Ian McShane.
Guys, you need to stay on task here. Okay? We're trying to talk about a movie here, and you guys, come on.
Ian McShane is doing a voiceover basically explaining that there are sorcerers in the world, and the sorcerers basically fall into two sides. One of the groups follows Merlin. The other ones follow Morgana, who is the bad baddie. And it sort of comes to a head in 720. The two of them are sort of battling. Yada yada. Merlin dies, and he has three apprentices. He's got Balthazar, played by Nicolas Cage. He's got Victoria, played by Veronica, played by some hot chick who. And then there is
Horvath,
played by
Alfred Molina.
Yeah, that is a bit. He's kind of a doughy fellow, but he looks sinister. But
very dapper, though.
Oh, yeah. He's a good dresser. Yeah, I don't know. Mm-hmm. And so those three follow Merlin, as you would expect. Horvath becomes jealous of the relationship that is gathered between Balthazar and Veronica, and he betrays them. Merlin ends up dying.
Nick Cage traps Morgana in a Matryoshka doll.
Oh, no. Veronica traps Morgana inside of herself.
Oh, yeah.
And then puts herself inside the doll.
Which is a baller move.
Yeah,
I'd do it.
And then Nick Cage spends the following centuries trapping other Morganians in said Matryoshka doll.
Just adding layers.
Yep.
Right? Like an onion.
Hogger. Yeah. Bit of an hogger. Okay, so...
It never ceases to make you laugh.
All right, so let's flash forward. It is now the year 2000.
Bingo.
Yep. Okay, thank you. It's 2000.
And there is sort of a montage where Nick Cage is sort of going through the ages...
Trapping Morganians.
Yes, and also seeking what they call the Prime Merlinian. So it's supposed to be like the genetic and spiritual and power descendant of Merlin, who is going to be imbued with all of Merlin's powers and abilities and is the only one who will have the power to defeat Morgana. And he's got this little sort of
dragon
silver dragon that it's just like a...
It's like a little statue.
It's a little statue,
it's
exactly.
It's like a little pewter statue.
Something you would find at Earthlore, perhaps.
Yep.
Or Coachella.
Right? I was going to say Ren Faire, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it is Merlin's ring, and it can tell who the prime Merlinian is. Which, are we just going to talk about that right now and get it out of the way?
Yeah, we should just rip that Band-Aid off.
Prime Merlinian.
No, at first, I thought he was saying the prime millennial, you know? And I'm like thinking, oh, this is topical. Like, I'm a millennial, you know? Could I be the prime millennial?
Right.
You know, what is the prime millennial? And that, I was lost for like a solid 45 seconds during this movie.
Well, I went like a completely opposite direction. I was taking like a cartographic perspective, and I was like, oh, prime meridian.
Yeah.
That's important.
Mm-hmm.
That's a thing.
Topical.
And that's not what they were talking about.
No, they were talking about millennials.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Leave it to the boomers, right? It's from 720 AD.
I automatically started thinking of spacecraft, prime millennium falcons.
Mm.
I was way off.
Right. Was that 15, 12 parsecs or something?
Yeah.
In that direction?
Give or take.
Yeah. That's a Star Wars.
So Merlinians follow Merlin.
Makes sense.
Morganians follow Morgana.
Makes sense.
Do they call them Morganians?
It's something like that. I can never remember what it is.
Morganites? It's Morganians.
All right. I don't like it, but sure. Okay, so, blah, 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 blah. We've got a kid.
10 years old.
Yep, he's passing a note to this girl. The note drifts away in the wind, leads him on a chase.
On an adventure.
Basically, Jacob the Liar all over again as he's trying to follow this piece of paper.
You know what? There are striking similarities.
Whoa!
Those two opening sequences.
Shit. Exactly.
You're really selling this. I'm right there with you.
Thank you.
He ends up in a concentration camp.
Yeah.
Ghetto, if you will.
Liev Schreiber there, you know. It's,
yeah. The piece of paper slips into this door. It ends up being where Nick Cage or Balthazar is kind of held up. They meet. He randomly decides to try the ring, Merlin's ring, on this little child because he believes there's no such thing as coincidence, or basically the insinuation. The ring loves him, wraps itself around his finger, and now we got a vase that gets knocked
out. Yeah, so little Dave is like swinging the ring around. And he hears knocking and
I'm sorry, little Dave is swinging the ring around is definitely something that like you would say about a 13-year-old who's just discovered he's got an appendage that's not his arms and his legs.
Yeah,
Dave, swinging the ring around.
Where is little Dave? Oh, he's in his room. He's swinging his ring around.
Yep. So
you're even doing the motion.
Yeah, it's the motion of the ocean, man.
You're a wizard, Harry.
So, you're a hairy wizard. So, he realizes that when he moves his hand with the ring, he hears knocking on the wall, so he just continues to do it, and then the vase, like, explodes out of the wall, hits the ground. He picks it up, it opens, cockroaches spill out, and become Alfred Molina, a.k.a. Horvath, and bad shit happens from there.
Yeah, a battle ensues between Horvath and Balthazar, played by Nick Cage. Balthazar had basically left to go and get some wizard shit for the kid.
The Incantus.
Yeah, because he was basically like, this kid's the prime Merlinian. Got to start training him up Rocky style, right? He's, what's his fucking name in Rocky? Mickey. He was Mickey, right? And he's like, I got to train this fucking kid up because he's going to get chewed up and spat out. So he goes to get his boxing gloves, aka the Incantus, and in his absence.
I liked you better when you were mopping up spit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absence, all of this shit happens, and then a battle ensues, and then both of them get trapped in a vase.
A different vase.
So the one that all of the sorcerers are trapped in is basically, like Jackson said, it's the Russian nesting dolls, Matryoshka dolls, and it's the size of like an urn, like a small, like a single person urn.
Yeah.
Balthazar and Horvath get trapped in a full fucking sized Ming Dynasty vase.
Yeah.
And they get trapped in there for 10 years. So there's a lot of people getting trapped in sort of like standard
containers.
Everyday, you know, objects and containers.
Tupperware.
Classic wizard shit.
Yep.
Yeah.
Classic wizard
shit. I mean, if those wizards had a nickel.
They'd have at least two of them.
Yeah.
Which is not a lot, but it's weird that it happened twice.
Yeah,
two nickels and an urn.
It's a decent amount of nickels.
Is that a band name?
That could be a band. Two nickels and an urn?
Okay, two nickels and an urn. I thought you said two nickels and a nerd.
Ooh.
And I was like, that would also fit because of Jay Baruchel.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Two nickels and an urn.
I like urn jokes, you know? Like they're...
Do you get a lot of them?
I don't even like saying the word. It just sounds... It doesn't roll off the tongue.
Urn.
You haven't said it enough. You gotta say it a whole bunch and you kind of earn your right to say it. See what I did there?
Yeah, I liked it. Okay, so wizards battle, wizards in vase, flash forward again.
Every wizard is trapped now.
Yep.
We keep saying wizard. They never say wizard in the whole movie. It's all sorcerer.
It's fine.
There is a distinction.
But it's not...
It's not a hard line.
It's a soft line?
Yeah.
All right.
It's a fine line.
Okay, so we're jumping forward. How is it that the sorcerers...
How dare you?
How do they exit their urn?
It's 10 years. That's the rule of that particular vase. Is the first emperor of the Ming Dynasty trapped his first wife in there for 10 years. And anybody who opens it suffers the same fate. They go in there for 10 years. 10 years is up. Bing! The microwave timer goes off and they pop out.
Yeah.
I don't want that in my house.
Mm-mm.
No, it seems like...
Seems pretty cursed.
Irresponsible.
Yeah, I think, sort of like giving a crazy Merlin ring to a child and then just leaving him alone.
Yeah. Fucking off for 10 years.
Pretty bad idea, too.
To be fair, though, sorcerers and wizards as well, they don't have a good track record of child safety, you know, even child labor laws. And they're really, you know, they sort of flout the law in a lot of these.
Yeah, I don't know if there are wizard or sorcerer specific laws that apply.
There's no like national labor relations boards for sorcerers.
I don't think so.
Wow, they need to organize.
Yeah.
Like real soon.
Perhaps a ministry of sorts. You know?
Yeah.
You know,
ministry like of magic or whatever.
Well, that sounds a little
on the nose.
Protected, you know. I don't know.
I've got properties. Got attorneys attached.
Okay, so we're having fun here, aren't we? We're having fun.
You know the word "urn" is in attorney.
What?
Yeah,
learned something new. Flash forward. 10 years. So,
yes.
10 years on, the little kid that was in the shop, believe it or not,
now 20 years old and still awkward.
Jay Baruchel.
Dave.
He is a strong terms, but let's say a physics genius,
yeah.
Right? He is excellent at physics and he goes to NYU and he is very socially awkward, doesn't go out, much to the chagrin of his roommate and best friend. And the call to action is pretty quick in this movie. There's some light exposition where they talk about how he basically like became convinced through a lot of therapy that he imagined it. It was the result of like a glucose imbalance, yada, yada, yada. He bumps into a girl that he really liked 10 years ago.
Becky.
There was also exposition about how he transferred schools to avoid the ridicule that he was experiencing. So that's why they lost touch. They now bump into each other at NYU, yada, yada. Suddenly, it's been 10 years. Horvath and Balthazar
are free,
are out of the urn, and shit is just popping off again.
So Morgoth, is that it?
Horvath.
Yeah, Horvath is searching for that urn so that he can release Morgana.
Yeah.
Morgana's plan is to raise an army of undead
sorcerers.
Minions. An undead army to take over the world, basically.
Not what you want.
No.
Yeah, I feel like when they first introduced it, it was like the undead, just any old undead.
Yeah, army of the dead.
And then like later in the film, they put a finer point on it and they're like an army of
undead sorcerers.
Like Morganians. And I'm like, okay.
That's way worse though.
That's super badass. Like, you know, it'd be cool to just raise the dead and make them an army.
Yeah, army of zombies is cool. Army of zombie wizards is fucking awesome.
That's pretty cool. That is metal as fuck.
Call them fucking Death Eaters or some shit like that, you know? Or maybe not. Maybe you don't call them that.
A zombie wizard army.
That's a band name.
Zombie wizard army? Yeah.
The wizard zombie army?
Zombie wizard army. ZWA.
Ooh.
Yes.
Ooh. Okay.
Straight out of Camelot?
Straight out of Camelot. Oh, that's good. That's really good.
Fuck the Arthurians. fuck the Arthurians.
Goddamn.
Yep. Okay, so Balthazar, Horvath, their battle pretty much just like resumes.
Yeah.
Horvath tracks down
Dave.
Dave and the doll. Horvath, he finds a Chris Angel.
Yeah.
That's exactly who he is.
Co-ops him. Apparently Chris Angel, it's not actually Chris Angel, but like is an actual sorcerer.
He's also a Morganian.
Which is like the best cover you could possibly imagine, right? Like you know how to do real magic. You become a stage performer and you do real magic in front of people and they're like, wow, what an amazing amazing illusion, right? Yeah. Like, that's it's a perfect cover to sort of, like, live the way you want out in the real world, right?
Yeah, and his whole thing is, like, he does these party tricks, this stage magic, because his master fucked off at 15 years old, and he was left with very little of an education, so he got the power.
And as he put it, prescription-grade abandonment issues.
Yes, yes. So he was left with this power and no way to figure out how to use it, so he just kind of stopped there and started doing stage magic. But he is now a pawn in the game.
Basically.
Yep. And it serves to, like, level the playing field. Balthazar has his Dave, and Horvath. What was the guy's name? The Chris Angel type?
Drake Stone.
He kind of looked like a Drake.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. His name was plastered all over his apartment and posters throughout the city.
I don't know if I would agree with you that he looks like a Drake. I think he looks like an Ethan.
Ooh.
And I think he looks like the kind of person, it's like everything about him would suggest that he insists people call him Drake.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ethan Drake.
It just sounds really cool, you know? I want to be that guy.
I think his name is probably, like, you know, Ethan Wallowitz or something like that, right? It's something very benign, but...
Dirk. Dark Dirk.
Ethan Richardson.
Yeah.
It's like...
Dark Phoenix.
Dark Phoenix. Yeah. Ethan Richardson, but you call me Dark Phoenix.
Yeah. I was having Mystery Men, you know, moments there. Anyway, so I think we can, not like fast forward too crazy, but like there's some back and forth, some cat and mouse. They're trying to get the ring. They're trying to get the urn.
For reference, the urn / doll is called the Grimhold.
Yes.
And it is a magical container that holds all of
the Grim.
The Grim, basically. And they call it the doll, they call it the Grimhold, but it is one and the same. We refer to it as also an urn, which it is not, but it is resembling of an urn, so there's that.
It holds human remains.
It does hold human remains.
In a slightly more magical way.
Yeah. Less conventional definition.
Less conventional, admittedly.
Yeah, so like we were saying, cat and mouse, back and forth, they try to get Merlin's ring, Balthazar stops them. They try to get the Grimhold, Balthazar stops them. They're fighting back and forth all the while Dave's education continues, and he learns how to throw fire and plasma bolts and protect himself at a very minimal capacity. Like, here's a little bit of magic, don't die.
I think they do a decent job of, like, trying to equate, like, magic with science. And, you know, Dave is very gifted, you know? He's building a Tesla coil in this, like, abandoned subway room. So, like, yes, he's coming into it cold, but, like, it kind of, like, lays some foundation that, like, he's just naturally gifted with it. And so if science and magic are one and the same, then it makes sense that he's just going to be a quick study, you know? So it doesn't feel undeserved, you know? And Dave's, like, magical element that he plays with all the time is, like, plasma, but, like, it's basically electricity, you know? Same thing. So, again, it tracks. You know, it doesn't feel like we've got one scene where we've got this, like, random kid who doesn't know anything, and then in the next, he's, like, shooting lightning bolts out of his hands.
Yeah, and he does struggle with it. I mean, it's not like he just magically figures it out.
But it's connected in a way that doesn't feel too jarring.
Yeah, but it's got that, like, Karate Kid syndrome where it's, like, this person's been studying this particular art form for, like, years and years and years and perfecting their technique, and the protagonist takes, like, a 2-week crash course and is, like, on their level of skill.
Yeah. Yeah, Balthazar's been doing this for over 1,000 years, and Dave figured it out in about a week.
I was talking about the bad guys, but yeah, that too.
Yeah, that's
sure.
True.
But yeah, no, so one of the other things, like you had mentioned, I thought it was so creative, the leveling of the playing field, right? Like, giving Horvath an apprentice as well, even though he's not an apprentice in the same way that Dave
he's
is, right?
He's a crony, but...
A crony, yeah, but again, somebody of...
A plus one.
Yeah, somebody of, like, identifiably less power.
More than Dave's, but not a whole lot.
Yeah, but still, like, you know, his training was truncated, like, he basically just knew enough to get by, and yeah, they basically each have a lackey, which is kind of cool. It's like, typically in these kind of movies, it's a one-on-one, right? And this was a 2-on-2.
Yeah.
Which is, or a 1.5-on-1.5.
Yeah. Over time, a couple of the sorcerers get released from the Grimhold. There's a Chinese sorcerer named Sunlock who turns a paper dragon into a real dragon.
Very cool characters.
Very cool character design. Very cool fight.
Super creepy.
Lots of fireballs.
honestly one of the parts of the movie where I was like, I'm not wholly convinced my kids could handle how like awesome, but super fucking creepy that dude looked.
Yeah. He has this dragon on like basically a WWE belt, and he just like moves the dragon across the belt and manipulates the real life dragon. And at one point it comes off the belt and goes through his skin. And it was like that scene in The Mummy where
the scarab beetles, under the skin.
Yeah. And that one gave me the collie wobbles for a minute, but it was cool. Yeah.
It was really cool.
Yeah. But yeah, they kill that guy.
There's like another like weird little Puritan girl or something. Like,
yeah. She was one of the Salem witches.
Yeah.
She was the Salem witch. I got the impression.
Yeah.
She was the reason why they went on the hunt.
She didn't stick around long.
Nope.
Which was unfortunate. You know, I thought they could have done more with that. But again, like, they've got a story to tell. So
basically, as we had mentioned, the Grimhold is Matryoshka dolls, right? It's Russian nesting dolls. So each shell, each doll is a different sorcerer. So the outermost one was Horvath. Then you had the Chinese fella. Then you had the Puritan girl. And then you have a combo of Victoria.
Veronica.
Why do I want to say Victoria?
I don't know.
Veronica and Morgana. And each one, you get the impression, takes a progressively more power to unlock. And Horvath basically needs more power to unlock the deeper levels and uses a parasite spell to take the power of the other sorcerers that he's working with and kind of kills them, takes their power, and then uses their power to unlock the deeper shells. All the while, like you said, Dave is training, but he's also cultivating his relationship with super hot chick. What's her name?
Becky,
which I can only imagine is short for
Bekitha?
Stephanie?
Sure.
Yeah.
What is Becky short for?
Rebecca.
Meh. I don't like it.
That's a Becca and then another Becca right after.
Right.
Well, I'm just saying I've never met a Rebecca who wants to be called Becky.
Now, if Becky was short for Bectoria, that would be cool.
That's a cool name, right?
Yeah, that's Bectoria. What I think it needs to start with a B. You know? Beckith is a Beth, you know?
I feel like David Beckham should name his kid that.
Bectoria.
Yeah, Bectoria Beckham.
Yeah.
Becky Beckham. Becky Beckham. Okay, so...
Crescendo?
Yeah, it does. They find a specific place in New York.
Battery Park.
Sure. That seems to be like, it's like purpose built for this, but we can go into that later.
Yeah.
He successfully opens up the final doll, if you will, releases Morgana. She's like this ethereal kind of, she's not a ghost, but like
she's
she doesn't.
An apparition.
First, she's in Victoria.
Veronica.
Veronica, motherfucker, Veronica. She's in Veronica.
Yeah, so she's in Vicky.
I'm not going to get it. She's going to be Victoria forever. I'm sorry.
It's fine. It's
Keith or Sullivan.
Can you find
it? And it's fine. I get my laugh.
Ian McClellan.
There's a wizard battle.
Sorcerer battle.
Somehow these like 1,000-year-old wizards know what a satellite is, and so they use a satellite to create a giant pentagram.
I'm sensing a tone here.
Shut up. this is not the we already.
I do love though. If you see the movie Four Christmases,
yeah,
there's this whole scene in Four Christmases where like Robert Duvall is shouting like, "I don't even want the damn satellite," and Vince Vaughn is like, "It's a satellite dish, not a satellite." His like.
Energy?
No, well, not just your energy, but like you calling the satellite dishes that they use to sort of like boo, 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 and create the big pentagram. Calling it a satellite had the same sort of Robert Duvall energy.
Actually. Okay, so Morgana is like briefly successful. We start seeing some like stirrings of skeleton.
Yeah, you see some undead sorcerers come up out of their... Yeah, so the spell is called The Rising.
Which, I mean, come on, that's a breakfast spot, right? Like, they're open like 7:30 to like 2.
Yeah.
Right? Breakfast, lunch, The Rising.
Mm-hmm. First watch, if you will.
First watch.
No.
Second watch. Night's watch. It's John funny Snow.
I only ever pass first watch when I'm coming to your house.
Yeah. It looks like a breakfast spot.
Yeah.
But like the watchers on the wall, it's protecting my house.
Yeah. Is that true? That was my stomach.
Your stomach's been crazy over there.
You've been checking it out?
A little.
Well,
you know, I'm not brag, but
I mean, recording. I've noticed.
I feel
he shot you those eyes.
I'm intrigued. You felt judgmental. He felt a little on the hook. Okay, so
that went in a weird direction, and I didn't hate it.
So we got the wizard. The
whistle.
So the whistles were battling.
The wizard
meanwhile,
sorcery.
Jim Henson.
The whistles swazzle, but they don't fuck
up. Okay, so Let's see.
Morgana is in Veronica.
Hey, you said it!
I know, I was doing, I literally was sitting there going, Veronica, Veronica, Veronica.
I'm so proud of you.
She gets out, though.
Yeah, so the spell gets, like, fucked up, and then she, like, collapses, and then Nick Cage brings her into him.
Does a transference spell.
And then she basically just kind of like, I think she's like, I don't like it in here. And then she like fucks off. And that's when she's all ethereal and shit. And then final boss battle between Jay Baruchel and Morgana.
I hope all that makes it in.
It's probably going to be really loud. I leaned in, I leaned in a little close.
So obviously Jay is successful, you know, because there isn't a sequel.
I mean, nah.
And more or less credits. What else do we want to tag on to the end?
There was some smooching.
Yeah, he uses his electrifying magic science machines and defeated a bad witch. And then Nick Cage was almost dead until he used his magic science machines and then to his heart. And then he was fine. And then everybody lived happily ever after.
Some sorcerer CPR.
You know, that's the good thing about, like, magic, is there's no stakes.
Yeah.
We can just magic our way out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Could be science magic. We could be Neo. Maybe we're healing Trinity over here, or maybe we're Jay Baruchel, and we're trying to fix the cage, you know? Who knows?
You're sensing a tone again.
I just got worried when you said no stakes. I thought we went vegan. And
right? I thought the same
thing. I'm not going to survive this, guys.
So I've been meaning to talk to you guys about your diets.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
You motherfucker.
Please, not the kale.
Not the kale! Not the kale!
Okay, so more or less credits.
Yeah. You know?
Okay, so let's talk about things that we liked.
I got a pretty good list going for things I liked.
Yeah, and sure, I'm gonna definitely shit on some things here because I like it. It's my flow. It's my
life. Yeah, I'll join you on you that.
Know? One thing
I
that
can I take some shits.
I didn't hate. I thought the effects were pretty solid. I mean, obviously it was CGI.
No, I'm right there with you.
But the CGI was like better than I expected.
I was going to say the exact same thing. Like the wolf scene, like they looked great.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm going to tag on another thing that I had written down because it sort of relates. It's like this movie had no business being as good as it was.
I would agree. This movie could have been an absolute disaster.
This movie should have been, by all rights. Like it had the tone and the vibe of a really bad movie.
Yep.
And it just wasn't. Like it was just way better than it fucking should have been.
Yeah. No, your first indicator that it could have been a really bad movie was that they cast Nicolas Cage.
Right.
And your second indicator that it could have been a really bad movie was that Nicolas Cage was wearing a wig. And
right.
Your third indicator that it could have been a really bad movie was everything in the movie was coated in so many layers of CGI.
And over the top, like, outfits, you know.
Yeah.
And I will defend them successfully pulling off all of those things, up to and including, I think Nick Cage looks pretty good with long hair. Like, that kind of disheveled, wavy, long hair.
I would agree.
I think he pulled it off real nice.
And it wasn't like Con Air long hair.
No.
You know, a little bit more, you know, healthy.
Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, like greasy, but not in a bad way. It was more matted than it was in Con Air. Like in Con Air, he looked a little...
Like at least his character in this movie had taken a shower in the last 1,000 years.
At least once.
Right.
See, I actually feel the opposite almost. Like I feel like in Con Air,
oh,
you know, if you wash your hair too much,
yeah,
at least my hair, right? Like when
it fries it.
Yeah, when I wash my hair like too much, I wash all the oils out of it. It sort of like fills out in volume. It looks too big.
Yep.
And it looks kind of like, you know, at least my hair, and I feel like Nick Cage's hair in Con Air, it's kind of looks hickish.
Yeah.
Right? They should call that movie Con Hair.
Mm.
But in this movie, it was like greasy, but not in a bad way. It was more matted and wavy, and he looked pretty sexy in his long hair.
I think they could have spent a little more time searching for a slightly better wig, but it worked.
I mean, would you want it?
Would I have wanted the wig?
No, would you want it?
Would I want it?
Yeah, would you put a wand in it?
I would
the
not?
Intensity of Mark's eyes right now as he's asking this question.
I don't know what's happening.
It's a phallical joke.
It feels like a mix between would you fuck somebody and Beyonce's would you put a ring on it?
Would you want it?
Would you want it?
Would you?
I don't want it.
I don't. Well, I mean,
I don't want it.
I don't want
if
it.
If you like it, you better put a wand in it.
You're a wizard, Harry. It all comes back to that.
About a cadaver.
Yeah. But yeah, no, like, I felt like the elements that made up this movie were, like,
It's ruined everybody's childhood. No, I'm sorry.
It's fine. You know, we're all prime millennials here. So, but no, like the soundtrack was all right. Like it was fine.
Damn it. You're taking all my shit. Right. It was a good soundtrack. I like the soundtrack. Yeah. And like creative versions of those songs.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Right. Let's see. Things that like, I like the humor in it. You know, what else did you guys like?
Cinematography.
What? Pray tell.
I know.
What the vistas? Perhaps were you a peeping?
So there were three scenes in particular that I greatly enjoyed, one of which was watching Nick Cage fly away on the Metal Eagle mm-hmm. that first time. And it's just kind of sweeping up the New York City skyline and just watching him like soar off into the distance. Another one that I really, really enjoyed quite a bit was the car chase. The car chase was super cool.
The car chase was fucking awesome.
Oh my God, the car chase. So not only did you get them like Fast and Furious style, you know, switching camera angles all the time, you got them inside the car from both the goodies and the baddies. And then in the tunnel, Horvath releases a bunch of smoke from his cane and basically blinds Balthazar and Dave as they're driving through this tunnel into oncoming traffic on a one-way where they're going the wrong way. And somehow they're just narrowly missing all of the cars that are coming through. Mm-hmm. I thought that was super sweet. And then in same said car chase, they hit the Hungarian mirror trap and everything is portrayed backwards. And they drive into their own reflection in this mirror that was falling off of a building. And they hit the mirror at just the right time before it hits the ground and shatters. And they end up on the right side of the mirror.
Baller.
That was fucking cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like the cinematography overall was good. There were great scenes, and then there were just your basic, like, we're shooting a movie and we have to shoot it from this angle. But I thought they were creative. I thought they used the really fun shots at the right times. And I feel like they used the basic everyday shots at the right times. There's one scene in particular where Dave and Becky are in the Faraday cage and he's playing, I can't remember the name of the song, but he's playing the song that she plays on the radio station every day using Tesla coils that are battering the Faraday cage. And it was like shot from a wide angle and it was spinning around the room. I thought that was really awesome.
Yeah, and like you said, the shots that weren't really cool, the ones that were just sort of like everyday, you could tell that the people whose hands this was in, like they knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
They knew how to shoot a good movie.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. They shot them from the right angles. They shot them in the right proportions. They used a wide angle lens when they needed to. You know, they didn't shoot the whole movie in fisheye. Like
that would have been a bold choice.
Oh, yeah.
It's weird to try to like quantify it, but like it wasn't like super remarkable, but it just felt, I don't know if I want to use.
It felt appropriate.
I don't, yeah, I don't know if I want to use like the word quality, but like that's kind of what I'm like mean to say. Like it felt good. Like it felt, I don't know. What...
Like I said, the scenes that were remarkable were supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And the scenes that were unremarkable were supposed to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Just well crafted.
I felt like the cinematography was done correctly for the type of movie that this was.
Yeah.
Okay, I got a couple other things here on my list. First, easy, right off the bat. The movie was just such a creative concept. And it's not like creative from like, you know, the sort of broad strokes of like, oh, somebody finds out that they're a wizard. It's like, we've seen that movie before.
Yeah.
But like the details of this movie were very creative and, you know, sort of tying in Merlin and Morgana and all that shit and like making it a story through time and all this. It was a very creative idea. I really appreciated that. Jay Baruchel's acting, especially, like he's got such a reactive face.
Yeah.
That a lot of the comedy hinged on his reaction to the batshit crazy stuff that's happening in front of him.
Oh, yeah.
And he really, I think...
delivered.
Yeah, I don't think this would have been the same movie if Jay Baruchel's character went to somebody who couldn't deliver the same level of comedy through a simple facial expression.
Yeah, yeah, he did a very good job of like being the eyes that we, the viewer, kind of perceive the universe through, you know? So he felt very human, very relatable, but then also kind of drove the narrative. It was just, he did a really good job with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought this movie had a very aggressive, and I appreciated how quick there was the call to action.
Yeah.
Like this movie wasted no time in getting you right into the fucking meat and potatoes of a movie that another point that I have listed here is that the action was great in this movie. The action and the comedy were both physical
perfect
comedy, like great, intense action. And the action wasn't limited to one thing. You had action in hand-to-hand combat. You had spells being thrown around. You had weapon fights. You had car chases. Like, it was a very healthy and eclectic mix of like fun action sequences and then interspersed with like great physical comedy. And it was a very kinetic movie.
Yeah.
And then the only other thing I have left on my list was, it feels like in movies, the bad guys always have the cool cars. And I feel like this movie kind of turned it on its ear a little bit.
Yeah.
I feel like this movie, the good guy, I mean, they've all had good cars, but like the good guys had the pretty fucking sweet cars. Like Nick Cage's, like, you know, original car was like a fucking, you know, 1930s style, like, you know, it was probably like a Cadillac or a Maserati or something like that. And then their cars morph into a Ferrari and a Mercedes McLaren SLR, and they get into this like aggressive car chase through the streets of New York. It was like fucking badass.
And then it ends with the bad guy's car being turned into a garbage truck that they use to crush the McLaren.
No, to crush the 73.
Oh, the 72 Pinto.
Pinto, yeah. Which I'm going to put in my dislikes because I don't think it was very realistic that when they
rear-ended the Pinto, it didn't explode.
They got hit. And the Pinto got like pinned between two cars. I was like, I know what would happen in that circumstance.
The exact same thought. I talked about it literally today.
Yeah. Like, that car would go boom.
No, we were talking about the cars that have the hydrogen fuel cells stored in the bumper. And I was like, wow, did we learn nothing from the Pinto?
Okay, I think that's the end of my list for things that I liked, which was a pretty, I would say, extensive list.
Yeah, it's pretty healthy.
You got for us, Mark?
Things we didn't like. Honestly, this one is not easy for me to like pick apart. You know, there's the obvious like continuity stuff that like jumped out at me, but most of it's kind of like nitpicky. Like there's that little scene where it was super cool when the first sorcerer that pops out after Horvath or whatever and Balthazar, what was his name? I forget what
it was. Sunlock.
The Chinese fella.
Yeah. When he popped out, he does this really cool thing where like he pulls all of these needles out of...
like acupuncture needles.
Yeah, out of this doll that are in an office. And like he uses them as like bullet spears or whatever. Really cool scene. But then, you know, in the next scene when they're walking through the office, all of those needles are back in the doll.
And then they're back in Nick Cage's jacket when they're on the street.
Yeah.
Though I will say, there's a part of that scene where he like morphs them into cops to try and like get out of trouble with the cops. And even when he's in his like police gear, the needles are still sticking out of his jacket. Did you guys notice that?
Yes.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah. So they had good continuity there, but then... whatever. It's a.
But yeah, no. You're right. You're right. The kind of shit that, you know, Scorsese probably would have caught, but, you know.
Right. And where was he here? You know?
Right.
Where was he here? I honestly, though, like, I'm probably going to have fun shitting on, like, specific things, but, like, overall, I don't have anything, like, I don't have,
It's not a Stardust. You're not going to call it thin and, what was it?
No, hang on.
Oh, he's got the notes. Oh, good.
Oh, good.
I was worried he wasn't going to have the notes.
I was afraid he wasn't going to bring receipts.
Is it thin and empty?
Those are the receipts.
I wouldn't call it thin and empty.
Oh, fuck. I got it right. See, that's what trauma does to you.
Yep.
It sort of sears it into your brain.
Right.
And then, you know, you end up holding on to it forever.
It's okay. Your nemesis, keep notes. So, for whatever reason, I guess I like this more than Stardust. Whatever.
How dare you?
Fight me.
How dare you?
It's, you know what? Write a book. You write a book about all the things that you're upset with me about, and I promise that I will pick that book up and I won't read it.
We're going to write that book. It's going to be a children's
book.
We're going
to do it.
And it's going to be called Mark the Stupid Poo-Poo Face.
Yes.
Well, you know what? Poo-poo. Okay? I poo-poo your poo-poo, and then you're stuck with a bunch of poo-poo.
And that turns into a goop-a-doop.
You don't want the goop-a-doop. Okay, so.
What do you guys not
want? Yeah, and I got some. And again, like Mark said, there's nothing that you can't ignore, right? Like, it's none of this ruins the movie, but it does like catch your attention in the moment sometimes, you know. Like, one thing that, like, or I guess these are kind of two things. One is very specific, but like, there's a lot of pseudo-scientific jargon that gets thrown around in this movie. You know, you hate to describe yourself as like a scientist because that's such a generic term, but like, as somebody who has like a pretty decent science education, it is exhausting to listen to, like, that shit just being, you know, it's like, it feels a little like movies that just, like, casually throw around the term quantum in fucking everything. And it's like, quantum, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, oh, well, as long as it's, you know, they're quantum socks, I guess we can pass into the other dimension.
Yeah.
You know, or like deodorant commercials saying, like, you know, it's odor blocking nanoparticle technology. And it's like, no, it's smelly stuff.
Don't shit
it's
on
just,
my
it's
Old
potpourri.
Spice.
Like, let's call it what it is. You know,
don't shit on my Old Spice.
Oh, all over the Old Spice.
They got sent elves doing shit.
Honestly, I appreciate Old Spice for that very reason, is they're not sitting here going like, odor blocking nanoparticle technology.
It's Terry Crews playing drums with his nipples.
I would sooner believe that Terry Crews was in my armpit hand fighting the odor particles than odor blocking nanoparticle technology.
I would pay a lot of money for that deodorant.
Yep.
I would. I'd pay like $6.50 a stick, which is like way more than I pay now.
Yeah.
$2.
A specific example of this sort of like jargony bullshit that's like, it's such a tired trope. And I feel like they could have gotten around this so easily. And it feels like lazy writing is like the whole like, the vast majority of the population only uses 10% of their brain. They use 10% of their brain. But we sorcerers, we use 100% of our brain. And that allows us to like manipulate the world and blah, blah, blah. And it's like,
Colin, are you saying that's not true? Okay, that's
get
science.
Get away from the 10% of the brain thing. That would be great.
Are you trying?
Thank you.
It was demystified decades ago.
No, it's true. Okay, did you guys see the documentary Lucy?
You know what?
Oh, yeah.
I did see that. That's fact.
Morgan Freeman said it, so I believe it.
I also saw Limitless.
That was with the drugs.
Mm-hmm.
That was a good movie, though.
I guess they were both drugs. Right?
The one thing I will give Limitless is I feel like his explanation of it was less like unlocking the rest of blah, blah, blah. It was just like, no, I mean, I'm on meth.
Yeah.
It's just meth, you know?
I got the drugs.
Yeah, the whole thing is, we only use 10% at a time.
Right. Yeah.
We use 100% of the tissue that is there.
When I'm walking, I'm typically using only one or two muscles at a time. Imagine if I used all of my leg muscles at the same time, how fast I could move,
right?
Imagine if you used all of your muscles. Imagine how fast you could move if you worked your jaw really, really hard.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I could really book it.
Woo.
I could really book it.
# science.
Uh-huh.
Science. So the only other thing I have written down here, at least, is it's a bit like, and again, this gets back, I said this movie's full of cheese. I think one of the things that I would say is a hallmark of cheese is like, it's very predictable, especially the jokes. You know, a lot of them are kind of like, you almost want the womp womp sort of like played over it because it's like, oh boy, that was just...
They went there.
That was very ham-fisted. But like, again, because of the way the movie is, because of what it is, in some respect, it's almost charming, right?
Yeah, like they can get away with it because of the movie, but...
In another context, it would be infuriating, right? Like, and honestly, it probably there is a contingent of people who are just sitting there going like, oh, God, did they really make that joke? Like that's so obvious.
Right. The droids you're looking for a joke that I made immediately after the scene in which the exact same trope took place. Like, it's like, I need to see your identification. He's like, you don't need to see my identification. And I just offhandedly was like, these are not the droids you're looking for. And then the other character in the movie said, these are not the droids you're looking for, as a joke. And I was like, okay, they can get away with it because he was telling it as a joke. But if he was being serious, it would have been nauseating.
But there were plenty of others where they didn't sort of like lean into it. Like, okay, if you're listening to this podcast, if you rolled your eyes when I made that like you've got to earn your right joke, if you rolled your eyes at that, this movie is just, I'm letting you know, is chock full of that kind of like cheesy bullshit.
Yeah,
it's Nick Cage.
It's
a Nick Cage movie based on a Mickey Mouse short.
It is, and we really haven't talked about that much.
So I would call this a mix of like and dislike. So obviously we all know the scene in Fantasia. So we kind of joked that this movie is a Disney movie called The Sorcerer's Apprentice. You have to include that scene. And I was like, no, in all seriousness, they started there and worked backwards and built the movie around it. Like, that's the scene that was on the trailer. That's the scene that sold the movie to general audiences.
So I think they did a good job with that scene.
The fact that it was in the movie.
They got it.
Was important, but at the same time, it does kind of
feel a little on the nose.
Yeah.
I took it as like, just don't take it seriously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
If you don't take it seriously, it's fine. If you take it seriously, it will pull you from the narrative because it is jarring.
Unfortunately, I feel like it would be the opposite if it was absent. People would be like, the fuck? You have like a Disney movie
called The Sorcerer's Apprentice and you didn't include the magic mops?
No fucking dancing mops? Like, what the fuck?
Yeah. So I liked that it was in there. I disliked the context in which it was, because they went super silly and did the dancing mops and then immediately pivoted to Nick Cage being super serious. And he's like, you got to get your shit together. You got to get your act together. And just like, oh, man.
Classic Nick Cage, though.
Yeah, but it is what it is. It needed to be there. It was very cute and silly. And then we get back to the narrative. So great. One thing, my only major dislike about this movie is there were a lot of situations of convenience.
Yeah. Like Deus Ex Machina, like shit just solves itself.
Yeah.
Because.
Like, oh, Nick Cage just happened to be in the right place at the right time to save the day again for the 11th time.
It's fine. It's a Nick Cage movie based on a Mickey Mouse short.
Yep. And that's, and that, right. That, like, I try not to take movies like this seriously because they're not meant to, but it's a very serious movie to not be taken seriously.
So I forgot to mention this in likes. And I feel like I actually probably should have mentioned this in pre-spoilers, was, to me at least, one of the saving graces of this movie and one of the reasons I like this movie so much is it's an extremely low investment movie.
Yeah.
Like, there is no part of this movie where you're actually sitting there on the edge of your seat. It's just something that, kind of like Ned Divine, but like in a sort of like modern action-y sense, right? Like, you can just sort of turn this movie on. You're not really all that scared for the characters. Like, it's just sort of can happen in the background. And it's fun and it's playful and it's, you don't take it too seriously, right? Like, which again is probably the reason why I give it such a pass on a lot of the cheese and a lot of the thing. And it, again, from like a filmmaking perspective, we sort of talked about how like it was very clear from the writing and from the directing and the cinematography, like this movie was in very practiced hands. And so I don't think that sort of like lighthearted playfulness, low investment type, I don't think that was by accident. I think that was by design.
Yeah.
Right. I think they knew exactly what they had. And they knew they could get away with this shit because it's just like, come on, guys. It's a funny fucking movie. Like Mark said, Nick Cage movie based on a Mickey Mouse short. Like, it's just a fun, playful movie.
And I think it's almost a gift, too, that it is such a ridiculous seed of a concept and they were able to create a movie that is enjoyable to watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so
they could have made it really like Looney Tunes, goofy, off the wall shit.
Yeah.
And they didn't.
They knew how to ride the line.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think if you view it from a certain perspective, it can seem, you know, a little stupid. But if you view it from the right perspective, it's like, hey, look what they did with what they had.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, which just elevates it, I think.
You took a 5-minute scene with no dialogue about dancing mops and turned it into a beautiful, rich narrative with characters that develop over time and exceptional world building.
Mm-hmm.
Damn. Anything else that we want to crap? I feel like we've been pretty fair. We haven't really shit on it, even though I feel like we called attention to some of its...
Yeah. All of my dislikes, you know, came with disclaimers.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So are we ready to move on, perhaps?
You guys want to quote this bitch?
Yeah, let's quote this bitch.
Let's,
Don Quixotes?
Yeah. Oh, Don Quixotes.
Yeah, you can't see it like right now, but I'm frowning at Jackson.
Oh, get him. Get him.
Because
get him,
Mark. I remember last time.
Oh, shit. Get him, Mark.
When you crawled up into my brain cells and you were like, right, I'm just going to poop on your brain.
Yep, I did that.
What is that? Wait, I was your hype man there. I was trying to help you out.
No, you.
And then we got to pooping on brains.
This is between Jackson and I right now. I'm locking eyes. He's not even making eye contact because he's afraid. He's afraid of my aggression, my animosity, my turbulence, if you will. I get it.
I want to rewind the tape to pooping on the brain.
This is a big, hot, wet, sploochy mess.
So who's pooping on whose brain in this
area? I'm shitting all over Mark's.
That's not what I signed up for. That's not what I signed up for.
You didn't sign that waiver?
I unzipped. I just ripped open that hedge.
See, the unzipping is the problem. You need the Long John styles with the two buttons at the top right above your...
Oh, no. See,
the poop flap.
I just do the Grandpa Joe from Willy Wonka with no undies, just full commando, night shirt goes all the way to the feet, and then I just stand on the shoulders and aim down.
Mm. Mm-hmm. That's a bold strategy.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And right onto Mark's brain.
Perfected over time.
I feel like my bit has gotten away from me.
Just a bit.
It was meant to be one where I
came out on top
of you.
Yeah. But here I am, standing on your shoulders, shitting into your brain. How does that make you feel,
Mark?
Well,
some people need to stand on the shoulders of giants to shit. I don't. Okay?
Okay. I am not here to declare a winner, but Mark's the winner.
At least that's what I'm going to leave tonight feeling.
No, hang on. I'm sorry. What was the genesis of the brain pooping?
It doesn't matter, okay? Okay,
none is of this... Brain Pooping Genesis?
Brain Pooping Genesis.
That's a band name.
Is that a band name?
Yep.
That's an album name.
Oh.
Brain Pooping Genesis.
Mm-hmm.
Brain Pooping Genesis.
It's the first in an anthology series.
I agree.
Okay. Who wants to go first with their... Oh, wait. So, of course. I've got one, which is to say I have seven.
Rounded right up to that nearest seven.
Yeah.
Well, that's what you do.
That's what you do.
Math, science, physics, whatever.
He's using 100% of his brain right now.
He's using 7% of his brain.
Yeah. Nearest seven.
60% of the time, I use it 100% of the time. All right, so this, I just chuckled at it. It's not a profound line or anything like that, but Dave is, you know, taking a quick leak, you know, taking a little quick leak at a urinal, and he's just super excited because he successfully asked out, wow, going crazy. What's her name again?
Fish Becky. Tits.
Becky.
I forgot to.
Yeah. He's chilling in the bathroom, and he's just singing to himself, you know, I've got a date with a girl. Because I'm awesome. You know? You just like telling. It's his first foray into that arena. And it's just cute. And it was funny. It made me laugh. So that was my quote.
It was
that
cute.
Was a good one.
It was cute.
So how many sevens do you guys have?
I have 1 7.
Yeah.
This line takes place during one of these sort of two-on-two battles. Horvath and his, you know, apprentice, let's say, even though it's not. And Balthazar and his apprentice, Dave, played by Jake Baruchel. And understandably, in the beginning, especially, like, Horvath is basically battling the two by himself, and Jake Baruchel is doing very little to help him out. And at one point, Horvath is sort of got Jake Baruchel on the ropes, right? And Horvath's lackey is kind of watching the door, right? Off, you know, frame left. And all of a sudden, clearly, Nick Cage arrives, saves the day, and Horvath turns around and Nick Cage has this fucking, like, apprentice, this kid, Chris Angel, you know, by the neck. And he just very casually says, you want your guy back? It's so good. Like, it's so good. And then after the 10 years has passed and Nick Cage is now out and he's talking to Jay Baruchel, and Jay Baruchel is basically trying to come to terms with the fact that this really happened and it wasn't a glucose imbalance and a hallucination. Jay Baruchel says to him, like, do you know what my life has been like for the last 10 years? And Nick Cage says, I've been locked in an urn for the last 10 years. And Jay Baruchel goes, well, so have I. A figurative urn of ridicule.
Glass box of emotion.
And then at one point, Balthazar, Nick Cage, is trying to illustrate the seriousness of the situation to Jay Baruchel and how dangerous Horvath can be. Trying to convince him to listen to his words. He says, so unless you want him to turn you into a pig that just loves physics.
And delivered with such like a Nick Cage, like, oh, disdain,
classic.
Yeah.
You know? Classic Cage
physics.
And then the last one comes after they sort of win their first, you know, battle, and you just hear in the background Jay Baruchel say, go team magical stuff.
Like a kid would do.
It's adjacent to go sports.
Yeah.
Do the thing, win the points.
Legendary super dudes.
So my seven will kick off with a conversation between Dave and his roommate. Dave has just recently reconnected with Becky and goes back to his shitty apartment, and he's talking to his roommate about, no, she's gonna remember me. And he's like, she will remember me? What are you, Braveheart? My next one is after the aftermath in Chinatown where they drop a flaming dragon on the Chinese sorcerer Sun Lok, the police show up and Nick Cage, Balthazar, disguises himself and Dave as NYPD officers. And they're like, yo, did you see what happened? And Balthazar, in the closest approximation to a New York accent, goes, you know, bottle rocket hits a paper dragon and the whole thing lit up like birthday candles.
Like birthday candles.
That was a pretty good scene. I feel like that was something that, like, I was not expecting. And Nick Cage hammed it up pretty well for that. It was enjoyable.
So another one, very serious moment between Balthazar and Dave. Balthazar is about to basically induct him into the world of being the prime Merlinian, you know. Dave has accepted his destiny, his hero's journey, and he's like, all right, I'm ready to do this. So let's rip off this Band-Aid and go. So Balthazar draws this magic Merlinian circle on the ground using his sorcery and looks at Dave and goes, once you enter, there is no turning back. And Dave Baruchel goes, so I should probably pee first. No, it's cool. I can hold it.
Oh, It's delivery too. Like, I don't think anyone could play that role like he did.
No, it was ideal.
I mean, I didn't see a place to pee inside that magic circle. So.
Nope. And my last quote, Dave sees Becky outside of her radio studio where she works and runs across the street at the perfect time because he knows exactly where she's going to be at all times and greets her. And she goes, "Are you stalking me?" And he goes, "Not in a threatening way."
Right. Right.
I'm just going to say, I don't think Jay Baruchel could do anything in a threatening way.
No, I feel like that guy holding a knife to your throat, you'd kind of be like, well, aren't you cute?
Like, I would hear him just stammer and be like, "Hey, man, just shut up and give me all your money." You're like, "Jay, are you in trouble?
Let's talk about it.
Did Seth Rogen do something to you?"
And then he just runs.
Yeah.
I similarly couldn't see Seth Rogen doing much in a threatening manner. Hold the knife to your throat and be like,
he'd hold the knife to your throat and be like, "Hey, man, I have a knife to your throat. Like, come on.
Not cool, man.
Cool, man."
It's all just like sit around and like, you know, smoke a J.
Came out a lot more John C. Reilly than Seth Rogen.
But. It's the same thing. Same person.
Yeah.
John C. Rogen.
John C. Rogen.
Are we perhaps ready to riggedy rate?
Oh, we didn't riggedy rate. We Laura Dern.
Ooh, I think we are Laura Dern.
Let's do it. I tend to go first, but I don't need to go first this time.
All right. I'm going to go.
Okay, go ahead, Mark.
I got this. I'm going to give this.
Actually, I'm going to. Sorry. I'm sorry.
I'm going to give this 7.2 flying metal birds.
Ooh. That's a.
It's a bit of a deep cut reference there.
Metabird.
Metabird, Metabird.
Pretty girls, pretty girls. Yeah. Admit it, you're happy we watched that.
Yeah.
It's come up in conversation a number of times at this point.
Pretty girls, pretty girls. I am going to give this movie a 6.6 Tesla coils.
All right. Solid.
Oh, did I steal it?
You stole my backup. You stole my fucking backup. That's good.
I'm over here stealing backups.
No,
stealing backups.
Stealing backups.
Stealing backups.
All right. I'm going to go 6.9 dancing mops.
Oh, all right.
Okay. Dancing mops.
Dancing or
Tesla coils right there.
Tesla coils.
Then stole my backup.
Man. Hoop it on your brain.
So, all right. So we're probably done.
Yeah, no, we're done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's all we have.
I'm going to get out of here, guys. It's been a good podcast. I'm out of here unless there's anything else you guys want to talk about.
Was that Reed? I think that. Did Reed come back?
The problem with Reed is he fluctuates so much through his accents. There's never telling if a voice off screen or off camera, if that's Reed. You can never tell.
Yeah.
He's culturally diverse. Thank you very much. He's been around. He's picked practiced. Up a bunch of dialects.
He's been edumacated.
I think we're done with the podcast, guys. All right. I'm going to get out of here unless there's anything else you thought we might need.
I can't think of anything. What about you, Colin?
Let me check. Oh, I found something. It's a scene score.
Scene score.
Scene score.
Thank you to everybody who completed our movie familiarity survey.
Bam!
To those of you who didn't complete it, you're dead to us. And
yeah.
Stop listening.
Wow. Yeah.
Wow. Just,
and
you're trapped in an urn, if you will.
Yeah. You are in the Grimhold right now.
Boom.
The only way to get out of the Grimhold, sign up for the mailing list.
Do it.
Get these movie familiarity surveys. Fill them out.
Do your homework, for God's sake.
Do your fucking homework.
God,
Jesus.
It will change your life.
It will. For like that, how long does it take to fill it out?
20 to 30 seconds.
For that 20 to 30 seconds, you're going to be a different fucking person. You're going to get a peek at what's upcoming. Mm-hmm. You're going to get a peek at Mark naked, perhaps.
I could be naked.
It's entirely possible.
No I'm promise. Not saying it's going to happen. I'm saying it could happen.
It could happen.
Things are, you know, magic, right?
Yeah.
You can imagine it.
Sorcery.
You never know.
You're a wizard, Harry.
You're a hairy wizard.
I'm Harry the Wizard?
That's right.
That's Harry?
That's a very fuzzy thing.
Maybe it's a picture of me naked. Who knows?
Hey!
Okay, so Sorcerer's Apprentice. Colin gave it a 6.6. Mark gave it a 6.9. Jackson gave it a 7.2. That gives us an average score of 6.9.
All right.
Which I'm pretty sure Mark will be thrilled about.
Just about right.
Our average familiarity with this movie was 3 out of 10.
Okay, okay.
A little lower than I thought, but then again, this movie is like almost 15 years old at this point. Yeah, so
I don't like that.
I don't like that either. No, I'm right there with you.
That's not great.
No. That feels weird.
I don't like that.
I heard something recently that was like, if That 70s Show came out today with the same distance between like when it came out and when it's set, it'd be set in like 2008. And I was like, fuck that. Fuck that. I don't know if I may be getting the numbers wrong, but like it's something like that. No bueno. No.
You guys are old. You guys are really old.
We are old, Jackson.
That's, yeah.
Both that's of true. You are yeah. very old.
That's true.
Super old.
You know,
just not old. As old as some people,
but wait,
Merlin. He's got all these expressions, guys. You can't hear the expressions, but trust me, he's got them.
Am I the oldest here?
You might be.
Womp womp. You guys are old. I'm not.
Okay, so that's 6.9 with the average familiarity score of 3 gives us a scene score of 7.6. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
I'd say it's slightly generous, but
I think it's, you know, 7.6. It's like you don't have to just run out and see this movie immediately, but I wouldn't pass it up if it's available to you. And I think this feels like the kind of movie that should be fairly readily available on streaming services or for free somewhere. I would watch it, to be honest. You know, I don't expect a ton, but it's good.
I'm pretty sure it's on Disney Plus, so anybody that has Disney Plus can get it.
I would be surprised if it wasn't. Yeah, for sure. Okay, are we Lurdern?
I think we are.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. That is all for the Ulcrep review. If you have any ideas for movies for us to review, you can email us at 3, that is the number 3, menandabasement@gmail.com. You can also go to our website, tmaab.podbean.com. TMAAB stands for 3 Men and a
Basement!
And fill out our movie review form to submit that to us. Every 5th episode, we're going to review a movie that a user submitted, one of you guys out there in cyberspace.
Well, that means it's coming up here.
It's coming up. Coming up. Dose more episodes.
Mm-hmm. That's 2.
I don't want to brag, but that's, you know, it's Spanish. So
yeah.
And please be sure to check out our upcoming tour. We've got Brain Pooping Genesis, which is
a very messy show.
It is a stanky band.
It's like a GWAR show, except, you know. Without the guardrails.
Yeah, right. Yeah, GWAR is known for their... They have training wheels on, basically. Yeah, yeah, that's what they're known for. They really hold back so as not to offend. We've also got 2 Nickels and an Urn, which is on a side stage.
Their music is a little odd, so it's an acquired taste.
It's very depressing.
It takes about 10 years to really warm up.
Yep.
But once you're there, oh my God.
I don't know, 2 Nickels and an Urn, it sounds more like a hip-hop band almost, you know? 2 Nickels and an Urn, like it's got like a jump to it.
Yeah.
You know?
I feel like if it was a hip-hop group, there would be 3 people. And 2 of them would be the Nickels and 1 of them would be the Urn.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah, Ernie.
Big Urn.
Big Urn.
Ooh, I like it. Okay, keep going. Who else is on who's on the stage?
And then off on the backstage, we've got Zombie Wizard Army.
ZWA.
ZWA.
Badass.
Straight
out of Camelot.
That's a solo. That's a solo they have.
And I think that concludes our broadcast day. You can also find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, wherever you find your podcast, wherever you found this podcast.
Yeah, iHeartRadio.
And until then, I am Colin McCloud.
Mark Hope.
Action Jackson.
And we'll see you in cyberspace.
Risner.